540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is AP News. I'm Rita Foley.
A stunner in Washington. Senator Kyrsten Sinema, a Democrat, is now an independent. She left the Democratic Party, telling constituents in a taped message.
The WNBA star, who also played pro basketball in Russia, was arrested at a Moscow airport in February after authorities there said she was carrying vape canisters and cannabis oil. She was released in a prisoner swap with Russia. There's another hopeful sign: inflation pressures are easing. Here's the AP's Sagar Magani.
The government reports wholesale price increases slowed in November for a fifth straight month. On a year-over-year basis, they were up 7.4%. And on a monthly basis, the producer price index, which measures costs before they reach consumers, rose for a third straight month. Inflation remains a problem, but it's slowing from a four-decade peak over the summer. AAA says gas prices are now below their average a year ago, and supply chain snarls are easing. The producer price data can often signal where consumer prices are heading, and the government's highest profile inflation measure will come out next week. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Stocks have opened lower on Wall Street. Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema says she's leaving the Democratic Party and will be an independent. Democrats still hold a 50-49 majority in the Senate. J. Alexander Kwang, the former Minneapolis police officer who kneeled on George Floyd's back while another officer kneeled on his neck, is expected to be sentenced to 3.5 years in prison for manslaughter. A month into the nation's largest strike involving higher education, the work stoppage at University of California academic workers at 10 campuses is causing stress for many students who are facing canceled classes, no one to answer their questions, and uncertainty about how they will be graded as they wrap up the year. This is AP News.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial...
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lierley helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. And we are now on the air in Waukesha, live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
It is the Monday after the first Packers game, and I think everyone right now is licking their wounds.
But I do love that you're leading with "The Bears Still Suck" as the intro song. I mean, we're already on to week two.
Why are we not good at the season opener?
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on The Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. While Red Cross employees in Wisconsin consider going on strike, the Red Cross says it's made a generous offer to its workers. The humanitarian nonprofit says it's offered lump sum bonuses, annual pay raises, safety improvements, holidays, affordable health care, and paid family leave. Red Cross workers in Wisconsin are threatening to strike during the Red Cross's busiest blood drive of the year. Students at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville-Richland have delivered a petition to the UW Board of Regents asking to save in-person classes at their campus. But UW System President Jay Rothman says the decision to shut down in-person instruction in Richland Center is still necessary. In sports, Badger volleyball beat Penn State in a five-set tournament thriller last night. They advance to play Pitt tomorrow night. The Bucks are at Dallas tonight. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
The Earl Ingram Show is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Show Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram. You can call in to what number is that, Connor?
It is 844-967-2789.
So call in. This morning what we're talking about is the plight of the children in America and whether the political process is being responsive to what we think is a fundamental issue that all Americans can agree on, and that is that we need to make sure that every child born in America has the opportunity presented to it to live a full and wholesome life, to have secure health as they grow up, to have a good education as they grow up, and to have the opportunity to be well cared for throughout their formative years, so they can emerge into society and into our economy with all the opportunities to be strong contributors, not only for their own purpose, but for the economy itself. And I think it's clear that a number of other ethnic groups around the world, a bunch of other governments, have held strongly to the virtue of children and the importance of children, and have enacted policies such that families in those countries are assured of health care, are assured of daycare, are assured of vacation time, are assured of education and training throughout the life of their children up through their formative years, so that their children are given these opportunities. Now, whether they have the full opportunity to buy the third automobile, the second boat, whether their taxes are somewhat greater, is possibly another issue to look at. But what is clear is that the priorities they're placing on their children is the highest level of priority. And I would simply say that the facts in the United States today exemplify the fact that as we have developed the system of government, as we have developed our culture and our economy, we are not putting the welfare of our children at the highest level, as seen by the education system we're offering them, but also as seen by the budget that the median income family faces, that makes it really impossible for them to offer to their children, even the median income, the middle class family, can't really offer to their child all that I identified that is offered to children throughout the world in many other countries and many other cultures. And so what's wrong with us? And what is it? What are the policies that we ought to be adopting to try and get ourselves into the position of meeting this fundamental issue, this fundamentally important issue that I think all of Wisconsinites agree on? We haven't heard from everyone. We've heard from Lou from Kadehe. I was hoping we could hear from CJ today, who frequently calls in, because I'm just interested in whether, number one, we do have agreement across the board politically on this issue of whether children really are, the welfare of children really is the most important issue, and whether it is that we're currently meeting that adequately, and if not, what is it that we should be doing to adequately meet those interests? And my sense after thinking about this, and I thought about this over the last months, is that I have trouble talking about any other issue, because all the other issues we have divert us from being able to deal with this issue. They divert us from having the financial wherewithal to deal with these issues. But, of course, there are other issues we have to deal with. In the near term, we've had to deal with inflation, and we've had enacted the Inflation Reduction Act, which came in under Joe Biden's sponsorship and which was enacted quite quickly by Congress. And it has some interesting provisions in it, but some of them address issues that I think Donald Trump was focused on during his presidency, which is Buy American. There's this effort ongoing now to deglobalize and onshore the supply chains and to try and make as much of what is sold in America to be built in America as possible. And then, of course, we're seeing consequences from that, because when we start deglobalizing, we've set in motion a number of other things which have an impact on Tom, Dick, and Mary and have an impact across the world. One of the provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act gave an advantage to electric vehicles, electric motor vehicles, cars, that are comprised of, that are assembled in the United States and are comprised of minerals which come from the U.S. or U.S. free trade agreement countries. And essentially, those are NAFTA countries. And so the impact of that is felt in Europe, our strong ally in the European Union, and they have reacted quite strongly to this, saying, look, you're trying to enact a barrier to German motor vehicles or European vehicles. You're going to make it harder for us to sell cars in the United States. We're going to have to erect barriers to things American that will be sold here in order to protect ourselves from the shrinking economies that will occur from that kind of deglobalization. And sure enough, we're scratching our heads looking at that, thinking, you know, you're right. We probably have gone too far with this. We're going to have to do something about not being quite so draconian in the way this bill deals with Buy American. And the fact is that deglobalization is going to cause problems. We can list pretty quickly some things that we've all taken for granted as being inexpensive that will quickly become much more expensive. If this show was on television, you'd be watching a show on a big 55-inch or 75-inch flat-screen TV that you bought for hundreds of dollars at Best Buy or some such outlet. And the reason it was so inexpensive is because it's made with components, all of which are from abroad and are from countries who have developed technologies and the capacity to build things much cheaper. Some of the reason for that cheapness is cheap labor, but much of the reason for it is actually cheap technology. The fact is that TVs, wherever they're made, are substantially made with robotic technology, just like automobiles, wherever they're made, are substantially made by robotic technology now. So this capacity to get things inexpensively has a lot to do with the fact that different countries have developed different specializations and different capacities to make things less expensively. We're running into the same problem with respect to computer chips. Taiwan and South Korea, but particularly Taiwan, have become the centers for complex computer chips. And this notion that we would onshore the production of computer chips, the Taiwan computer chip manufacturing firm that is that produces approximately 90% of the most complex computer chips relied upon in the most complex kind of electronics stuff, is going to spend $40 billion in the United States building a chip manufacturing facility. And we're cheering about that. Joe Biden's cheering about that. That's a good thing. But incidentally, by the time that plant is completed, everyone knows that the chip manufacturing plants in Taiwan will be probably two generations ahead of building more sophisticated chips than this plant that's being constructed will be able to construct. So we can't just onshore jobs. We have to be able to onshore technological capabilities and things that we have not developed in the United States, which have developed elsewhere, and which has made the economy in the United States more efficient and has made goods and services in the United States more efficient. Another thing that will happen with deglobalization is we will have more inflation, not just because TVs will become more expensive, but because when you have a world supply market, you have far more competitors who are competing with one another to keep the price down. When we move things onshore, we will minimize the number of competitors in any particular for any particular component part. Prices for those parts will go up with less competition, and so will the price and inflation. So we will be more prone to shortages. We will be more prone to inflation. We will be more prone to lagging in the development technologically of what we otherwise want. We have to understand that the globalized world was an advance with respect to the capacity of economies across the world to operate efficiently, effectively, and to grow technology rapidly. So I'd be interested if any callers have opinions about this, but there's no question that self-sufficiency poses a problem. China has announced a plan for moving in the direction of self-sufficiency, largely as a result of the trade war that was implemented by Trump, and there came this realization that international trade could be weaponized. And that the weaponization of international trade meant that it might be important to essentially renationalize the industries and to deglobalize. The deglobalization of China will remove from the world one of the largest markets for things. It's not only one of the largest producers of component parts, but it's also viewed as the largest potential marketplace and the most rapid growth place for new goods to be sold. And the fact is that most American manufacturers of goods have stagnant growth in the United States and experience all their growth abroad, much of it in China or a rapidly developing economy like China. So the deglobalization of China will put the brakes on economic growth in the world and in the United States in a material way, so that we've worried to date about whether America is going to move into a recession. We're watching the rest of the world move into recession. We have not, incidentally, Lou, under the leadership of President Biden, we have not yet reached the formal designation of recession. And the fact is that our economy is quite strong. However, we are suffering inflation. Our inflation level is materially less than what's being experienced in Europe, although probably that differential is largely attributable to the war in Ukraine. But we have to come to grips with the fact that the economy in the United States is interdependent. And if we actually want to move it in the direction of deglobalization, and if that becomes a political movement in this country that gains real force, we're going to find out that our recession and the world recession could become much deeper. Apparently, we've gotten to another break. Let's move on. We'll be back after this break. I want to smile a while for me, Sarah.
Make me feel like a man, not keeping me crazy, crazy. Smile a while, oh.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio, VO5.
Let's do it.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
My fine guest, Maggie Dawn, attorney at law. I thought that the laws of the United States were supposed to evolve with societal norms. The vast majority of Americans, 70% approximately, believe that Roe v. Wade should be the law of the land. So that seems exactly contrary to the way the courts are supposed to evolve with our nation.
I'll just say this. The guy in Colorado can't be forced to make a gay wedding cake, but I can be forced to make a baby. I don't know about you, but that makes no damn sense to me.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Look through your children's eyes, and you will discover the true magic of a forest.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A winter weather advisory continues until 6 p.m. this evening. Cloudy this afternoon with a mixture of precipitation likely. Highs around 34. Winds out of the east 10 to 15 miles an hour. Chance for mixed precipitation tonight 32. Overcast. Chance for mixed precipitation tomorrow 38. 2 to 4 inches of snow today through tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com.
Color in sky, brush and blue, scarlet fleece changes hue, crimson ball sinks from view, where you love like him.
Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram. Connor, what number do people call in on?
844-967-2789.
So we've been talking about a variety of subjects. I thought I'd slip to one other subject today, this section. Black Lives Matter was a big movement in this country a couple of years ago. Lots of street demonstrations, lots of concern about it. It's not clear what came of it other than a political backlash and a great deal of sort of strident political discussion that maybe went overboard. But you look at the world now and you look at some places where there's been surprising levels of street dissension. For instance, in Iran, which we view as a very repressive society, and I think it is. And the street demonstrations there were about the morality police. And about how the morality police in Iran had taken into custody a woman who was not wearing her hijab, the head covering, and ended up dying in custody. And there were street demonstrations all across the country. And in fact, the demonstration spilled over into the World Cup with the Iran soccer team refusing to sing their national anthem at the beginning of the World Cup. And now we see actually that the Iranian government, as repressive it has reacted to it. And they announced just a couple of days ago that they were disbanding the morality police and that they were going to drop some of these requirements that had caused such consternation within the culture. So as repressive as it was, the government actually has been responsive to what is clearly a hue and cry from the people that ultimately, because it wasn't being related to in the courts or in their other pathways for reform, they took to the streets, and it had a reaction. China, another seemingly repressive country, and it is more repressive than us. I mean, it's 1.3 billion people, and so it probably takes a different form of government to govern 1.3 billion than it does 350 million. But China has had these airtight COVID restrictions that have been going on for years. They've shut down cities. They've had lockdowns. The people have experienced great deprivation as the result of the lockdowns. They've had some deaths that were viewed as unnecessary, certainly by the families that were experiencing the loss as the result of the lockdowns. And finally, these lockdowns caused such consternation that it spilled over into the streets. And as the COVID pandemic has gone on in China, and as restrictions have been relaxed in the rest of the world, China was realizing again very strict restrictions. Spilled over into the streets. We had days of demonstrations across the country. Very unusual. People were expecting the potential that it might turn into Tiananmen Square. There could be a National Guard, or what the U.S. would call the National Guard, called out, you know, rioters killed, arrested. Well, there was some repressive conduct with respect to the rioters, but what else happened? Well, the government announced that they were lifting the COVID restrictions. Almost overnight, they moved from COVID lockdowns to a COVID policy that looks a great deal like the COVID policy that existed in the United States about 6 months ago. So we have two places in the world where street rebellions and street expressions of consternation about their policies resulted in actual policy shifts and important policy shifts. Iran materially changed something that was called the morality police. They essentially eliminated the morality police. And yet here in the United States, we had a Black Lives Matter movement, which in every way to the rest of the world must have looked like the Iranian street demonstrations. They must have looked like the Chinese street demonstrations. And the result of our street demonstrations was about nil. And so it concerns me that the American political system has become so mired, so locked in paralysis, that we don't even get responsive to civil demonstrations, civil demonstrations, most of which were entirely lawful across the country. Yes, they did spill over into rioting in some places, but in large part, we had civil demonstrations demonstrating a great deal of consternation and concern amongst the body politic out here, and yet it resulted in almost no change. We should ask ourselves a question. Is there something wrong with the American political system that isn't wrong with places that we would hold in such disrepute as Iran and China, when those two places end up being very responsive to their public and ours is not? And I, for one, would ask the question. I think that our political system has become so fraught, so preoccupied with kind of crazy social issues that shouldn't even be up on the blackboard. They should simply be accepted parts of our society. And yet, we have wasted so much time on statewide referendums and national debate and state debate about who can occupy bathrooms and what can go on in bedrooms and what should happen with respect to same-sex marriages and the carrying out of marriages. I mean, we have just become preoccupied with things that aren't really important in the grand scheme of things. I started out the show focusing on children, and, you know, there might come a day when we'll have to go to the streets to protect the interests of our children. That hasn't happened, but apparently it hasn't worked here on Black Lives Matter like things worked in Iran and China in a similar circumstance. We're going to another break. We'll be back shortly.
Lord, kiss me once more, fill me with song. Once more, that I may wear my love like heaven, wear my love like
heaven. WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio, streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Good morning, I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. WNBA star Brittany Griner is back in the United States, arriving in Texas. Here's the AP's Sagar Magani.
Nearly 10 months after being detained in Russia, Griner stepped off a plane at a Texas military base. She was freed in a deal announced yesterday with Moscow, exchanged for Russian arms dealer Victor Boot. It's unclear how long Griner will stay at Joint Base San Antonio Lackland, or what comes next, including a potential return to the WNBA.
But the U.S. failed to win freedom for another American, Paul Whelan, who has been in jail for nearly 4 years. International Olympic Committee Chair Thomas Bach says Russia could return to some international sports events by competing as part of Asia rather than Europe because of the war in Ukraine. The statement did not directly address whether Russia and Belarus can send teams to the 2024 Olympics in Paris. I'm Ed Donahue.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your...
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinee with your headlines. Some of Wisconsin's largest utilities say they're ready to respond after a recent gunfire attack on substations in North Carolina left thousands of people in the dark. The targeted attack by one or more people damaged equipment and left over 45,000 customers without power on Saturday. Thousands remained without power until the company repaired the damaged equipment and gradually restored power on Wednesday. The Associated Press reporting federal authorities warn the power grid is a target for domestic extremists who've been developing specific plans to attack infrastructure since at least 2020. In February, Oshkosh resident Jackson Solwell pled guilty to conspiring to provide material support to terrorists. After plotting to attack a Midwest substation using rifles to penetrate transformers, Solwell and conspirators said they were willing to die in the scheme. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Show, Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram. I'm looking outside. It looks like one of those snow dome things you tip upside down, and it's coming down out here in Waukesha. I don't know what it's doing elsewhere in the listening audience, but we got snow. It was forecast, and usually, you kind of hope they're wrong when they say 4 inches, but it looks like they're probably right. You know, this morning was in some ways sort of a feel-good morning for some sports stories. I'm sure everyone feels good about Brittany Griner getting released. I sort of felt good about another aspect of it, which was some of the videos that showed her being hugged and embraced by her fellow Russian teammates. And, you know, the fact is that the Russian people aren't the problem that the United States government perceives with Russia. It's not the people, it's the government. And I think too much of the time we begin to villainize the people of a country like Russia, when actually they're as much victimized by the circumstance, maybe more so than we are. They're feeling and are feeling the victimization from the sanctions that we're leveling. The sanctions are aimed at causing the government to change its policy, but the sanctions, the way that they're intended to change that is to put so much pressure and so much hardship on the people that it causes the government to change its view. It's a bit like the Russian policy of bombing the infrastructure of Ukraine and trying to get Ukraine then to come to its knees because the people of Ukraine would be so uncomfortable without light and heat in the winter that they would want to bend. Well, we're trying to do the same thing to Russia, but we're doing it through basically causing such a nasty recession with shortages for the Russian people that I guess we hope that they'll bring pressure on Putin. But in any case, Brittany Griner's release is a welcome thing. The other feel-good story, and I have to say I did watch some of the game last night, was Baker Mayfield. This poor guy has been the object of a great deal of derision. He was traded, going to have his second coming and played well for the Panthers, I guess it was, when he was traded from the Browns. He'd kind of fallen on his face after great expectations with the Browns being a number one draft choice. Goes to the Panthers, doesn't do well, is benched, asks for to be released. He's released. He's picked up by the Rams. And in his first game for the Rams, after 24 hours on the payroll, no time to study the playbook, pulls off a 17-16 come-from-behind upset of the Raiders. I mean, that was a feel-good story. I have to say, I don't know anything about Baker Mayfield or whether I should feel good for him, but I do. I thought that was the kind of stuff that Hollywood films are made of. So I was pleased to see that. I guess we have someone named Don who's called in. Don, I don't know what issue it is we've talked about this morning that you want to speak to, but what do you have to say? Don? Well, I guess we're gonna get Don on in a minute. In terms of feel-good and feel-good in sports, the other one is the World Cup. And I was going to lean over to talk about, bend over to talk about the Ronaldo and Messi confrontation, Sandy, that might happen. Yep.
Yeah, Don can, he's on. Okay. He can talk.
All right.
I was just screening him.
All right. Yeah. Don, what do you have to say?
Hey, Sandy, good morning. Don Brown from This Week in Waukesha on Saturday mornings, former alderman. Sandy, I wanted to let your audience know, if they're not aware, the WIAA, Wisconsin's, high school sports governing body, published a release yesterday saying they're involved in a major conference realignment, and they decided not to make any changes to the Classic Eight after a very large lobbying audience of Waukesha South parents, coaches, faculty, community members that have been trying really hard to get our team out of that conference. Our school is much smaller than the other Classic Eight schools by, you know, at least one half, maybe more. We have a very large lower income student body. We don't belong in this conference. We're not interested in the state championship. We're interested in a level playing field for our young men. You know, we had to forfeit the last two games of the season because of injuries, and our non-conference record, the two games we play every season, has been like, you know, the wins have been 75% or more against teams that were better suited against. And Waukesha North is in the same boat, and there really is a lack of care or concern for the safety of our young men in Waukesha South, our students in general. You know, we're kind of the ugly stepchild of the conference, of the school board, and you know, we need to get a bigger message out there. And so I appreciate this your platform to at least make this known. I know Earl's been taking an active interest in Waukesha, and learning more about the community. So I'm sure he would be very concerned about this as well.
So essentially you're being held prisoner in this conference. You said the conference wasn't changed.
Yeah.
And it needs to be changed in order to allow South and North to play teams that are more they're more competitive with. Well, I know this circus.
Yeah.
I did coach football for a while some years ago.
That's right.
And it's terribly important that teams be evenly matched. Football is a physical sport, and it's a potentially brutal sport. And in high schools that are very big, for instance, with big enrollments, tend to have linemen that weigh 300 pounds and linebackers who are big, strong, and fast. And they just have more people to draw from, and so they're more likely to have teams that are capable of playing at a higher level with a much greater degree of ferocity. And it's dangerous to pit teams that are not well matched against one another. Absolutely,
no doubt. And and our conversely, our basketball program turned it around in recent years, won the Classic Eight. And Connor will tell you because he broadcasts the games with me. We have a non-conference schedule of great teams. Teams that are probably ranked in the top 10 of the state. Connor's witnessed already a couple of Division I. So we're not afraid of competition, and that helps us for our conference play. But in football, it's a much different story. We're as you said, you know when you're largely undermatched physically and all the other things, that it's not safe for our young men, and it's just not a level playing field.
And that's really all
we're asking for.
Quite frankly, those of us who grew up playing sandlot sports remember the day when you'd pick teams and you'd play, and if they were uneven, you'd repick the teams to try and make them even, to try and have a good game. Because you know what? It's not fun to win a game that's one-sided. You didn't accomplish much. And so it's taking winning to a ridiculous extreme to want to hold into
really
a conference
is.
A team that's a patsy for you that you can win easily against so you can have the championship. Well, yes, but what a bitter taste.
And that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's running up points. It's giving their best players a chance to rest and some of that I can understand, but wouldn't you rather, they always say to be the best, you got to beat the best. And when you look at all the juggernauts that are in that conference, you think it would be in their best interest to even split the conference up more. So instead of playing, five or six teams that are juggernauts, that maybe it's just three or four. And then the other teams you're playing, maybe you've got a better, chance to win against, and guys aren't getting hurt. I mean, you hear about all these great rivalries, Michigan and Notre Dame, they took each other off their schedules because guys were getting hurt in those early games, and so it's like they probably benefit the whole conference. You get a state champion out of that conference every year, and sometimes two, because some of them are in lower divisions. And it's interesting to me, coming from New York State, we never put teams in the same division that were from different class, or the same, football conference that were from different
classes,
divisions based on student body.
Yeah. Well, so I think some of this stems from organized sports starting so early, so that I've got grandchildren now, and I had children who played soccer. And, you come, a child, first of all, the parents are going and watching them play when they're 6 years old. I guarantee you, when we played sandlot ball, no parents came to watch.
Yeah.
We were there.
We were
there to have fun and to experience fun.
Right.
Nowadays, when a kid comes home or at the end of a game, the first thing the parent asks is, did you win? Or they want to talk about whether they won. And the real question,
it's a performance review by mom or dad, or both.
And the real question should be, did you have fun? Did you feel like you got better?
What did you learn?
What did you learn today? Yeah. And did you have fun? And so when we start elevating winning to the almighty issue, it's the currency of sport, of young people's sports today. You start having people who want to set up a conference that's set up for them to win, and it's not set up for the benefit of. It's not a positive experience. I know from experience, I played in high school, and we had a couple of games where we won 45 or 50 to nothing, and it was not it was not a sweet taste. It was nothing. In fact, we all began to feel a sense of mercy, like we felt badly for the opponents. It wasn't what games are supposed to be. I think that American society, another way that we're broken, I guess, quite frankly, is that in the sports arena and with our children, it's all about winning, and it's not about life's experience.
Yeah, Well, right. And it's, you know, and jumping back to you, what you said about youth sports, it's in many ways, it's become the new Jim Crow, because you pay an exorbitant amount of money, like college tuition fees, to get your kids in some of these clubs. And I can count on one hand, with three of my four children active in these sports, that,
yeah,
you know, maybe two hands, the number of children of color that they played with or against in all their years of, you know, softball and, you know, the one exception was football, because our son was in the, you know, the South football program since, you know, fifth grade. And, you know, we're the most diverse school in the class of eight, but there were probably several more children that didn't have the chance to play because of affordability.
Well, and the beauty, you know, the beauty of basketball is it's five people on a team, and three really outstanding players on a team can make a team very competitive. Mm-hmm. And so it's like
one player,
you know, like the movie Hoosier and Hoops. You know, it's clearly a sport in which it doesn't require the same level, and basketball is not a game that costs money to play as a junior. So, you know, you can play on the playground, and you can play in every city playground, and everyone does. So it's like soccer in the rest of the world. But, you know, you're right. I've got experience with hockey. I know how expensive hockey is as sport. And, you know, hockey is trying to figure out ways to set up scholarships and stuff, because, quite frankly, the cost of it is a barrier to diversity. So, you know, that's a problem.
Doubt.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's tragic that baseball there's been so many barriers. Like, do you remember when your kids was like $25 to get on a little league team, and you just had to pay for your own glove and your cleats and everything, you know, the bats and the balls and maybe even a ticket after the game to get a freeze pop or a snack, you know, at the concessions after the game. And now $25 might pay for your socks. it's just crazy.
Well, and your kid needs one of these special bats that cost, like,
oh, they got to have their own bat. Oh,
an
gosh,
enormous
yeah.
amount
yeah.
of money.
Drop 30 batters.
Yeah, I don't know.
They need a bat for every emotion, you know, or every type of pitcher now. Yeah, it's crazy. It's just gotten so out of hand, you know. So, and that was the beauty of baseball. Stan, you might remember this, is like, you know, the two best players in the team, they're oftentimes the ace pitchers. And one guy was a surgeon's kid, and the other guy was a factory worker's kid, you know, from very different backgrounds. But on the diamond, they were soulmates and they were equals. And you know, that's what made baseball great. That's what made it the American pastime, is that people from all walks of life could play and compete. And even if you weren't as athletic, you could overcompensate for speed or any of those things by just trying hard and competing and learning the game. And, you know, again, now it's just like, you need college tuition money just to be on a, you know, seventh or eighth grade select team or elite club, whatever they call it now.
Yeah. You know, well, so. I just think this is once again, I think, actually, we've started out the show talking about children and whether we as Americans believe that all children should be given the complete opportunity to experience success and thrive in their childhood in such a way that they are trained and educated. And one of the ways that we're actually falling short on that, and we're only thinking about our own child, is this whole process of making participation in sports expensive. We can afford it, but maybe they can't. And that's really part of this kind of inward look and non-communal look that I think is reflective of a problem. We got a break. Thanks for calling in, Don.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
My apology.
The Devil's Advocates.
But do you think the Biden administration's calling up Laura Ingraham and making the announcement to the world that we're invading Russia with amphibious troops? Come on, Trump. I mean, and I want to hear fine Trumpsters that want to defend that crap. You know, he's a little late for the early bird buffet. Maybe you people were just naive marks who believed he was a super genius. Then I got some land I'd like to sell you outside of Fukushima.
Check out the entire podcast library at darnwi.com.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A winter weather advisory continues until 6 p.m. this evening. Cloudy this afternoon with a mixture of precipitation likely. Highs around 34. Winds out of the east 10 to 15 miles an hour. Chance for mixed precipitation tonight 32. Overcast. Chance for mixed precipitation tomorrow 38. 2 to 4 inches of snow today through tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
I met her in a club down in Old Soho, where you drink champagne and it tastes like
Oh, I shouldn't sing. You know, in fact, I've been caught singing in the shower, and people run in and say, hey, could you please stop that? This is Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show. This is the last segment. We've had an interesting morning, I think, talking about a variety of issues centered on children.
Don't listen to them, Sandy.
What, I should sing?
Yeah, you should sing in the shower.
Yeah, I think I should, too. But I should turn the shower up, the volume of it. Last segment, a couple of sort of extraneous, miscellaneous things. Kyrsten Sinema becomes an independent. What does that mean, do we think? You know, I've been one who's been pushing the notion that we need to have more parties than two. An independent party, I think, could be important. Clearly, she's looking, I suppose, to increase her leverage. She and Manchin had a great deal of leverage when they were sitting on the, when the Democrats were sitting on the brink, so they could exert a good deal of influence on policy, and I suspect that being an independent might put her more in that position. She joins a couple of other independents in the Senate now, so we've got three. But it's an interesting move. You know, it was one I don't think was necessarily expected on the national scene. And it would be interesting to see the extent to which independents begin to exert more influence nationally, whether they are declared independents as a party or whether people begin to identify as independents. I do think that the people who are purple in this country, the ones who have been deciding elections in all the contested states, probably do more or less consider themselves independents and probably align in their thinking with someone like Kyrsten Sinema. I think Bernie Sanders is an independent more because he feels he's on the outside, more on the left. Kyrsten Sinema wants to identify herself as being in the middle, and it's unclear to me whether the people who are currently disassociative from the parties view themselves as outside the party on the left, more progressive, more inclined to develop the social safety net that I talk about, or whether even maybe the centrists might be more inclined in delivering to the American family what they need and want. I was asked by Lou, I think he was doing it rhetorically and trying to do it combatively, what it is I would want for the average family, or what I think ought to be enacted to solve the problem that's faced by this middle-income median family that I identified in Wisconsin, who has an income of $63,000 and an expense set of necessities that don't even include food, clothes, savings, or an automobile, but rather hard cost necessities, rent, electricity, gas, internet, phone, health insurance, and daycare of $67,000. They're in a $4,000 deficit. If you add a car and the rest to it, you're probably adding another $10,000. That's a $14,000 to $16,000 deficit. So What would I say we ought to consider? Well, I think we ought to really be focusing on universal health care and universal daycare. Universal health care will solve this health care cost problem, and universal daycare will bring workers back into the workplace to benefit the employers, and it will solve this immensely expensive daycare problem, and it will get many more children off on the right foot early in their life. It's been demonstrated that the daycare is a very fundamentally important service to be provided, or a very important thing for children to receive in order to give them the advantage of a head start on education. We have a call. We can take it quickly from Bob. Bob's from, what is it, Wisconsin's East Coast. I guess you must be from Milwaukee, huh?
No, I've been up and down all of Wisconsin's East Coast my whole life. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, Bob. What do you have to say?
Well, I want to point, when we talk about the correction of inflation, inflation has been caused by the very powerful companies raising their prices. When we expect prices to go up, they've gone up even further with them, because we would accept their price increases, and and that hasn't been how we've been trying to correct inflation, by asking these companies to reduce their rates.
Well, actually, Bob, you raise a good point, but one of the things that is being carried out by the Biden administration right now and announced in the last couple of days is a much more active antitrust policy, and they're trying to keep businesses from becoming even larger and having more leverage in the marketplace to demand higher prices. And there is no question that shortage environments put an advantage in the hands of the people selling commodities and selling that which is in short supply. And shortages do tend to result in heavy run-ups in prices, which happened, for instance, in gasoline. Happily, the policies that have been adopted with respect to gasoline has also caused a relatively rapid deflation in the price from the maxes that were realized 6 or 8 weeks ago, when it seemed to be such an issue. So, but I'm hopeful that we can get the politicians, at least, to speak about things that are more than today's brush fire. And the whole thrust of this show, which is coming to a close shortly, is to talk about whether we can get politicians and the people of this country to talk about the issues that matter long term, the ones that could actually make a difference to this median family, the middle income family, the family that faces this substantial financial shortfall. And if the middle-income families face this shortfall, I'm simply saying if we fix it for the middle-income families, we can fix it for the lower-income families as well. If we fix it for middle-income families, and even if the middle-income families are largely ethnically white, we will be fixing it for lower-income families who might have a different complexion. I think if we focus on middle-income families and solve this serious problem that is faced by many families in America, we will solve problems that will go up and down the income ladder and will solve problems for many people at large, and can maybe ease and relax racial tensions. Because I think one of the problems is that by paying attention currently and talking substantially about those who are in the lower class who are poor, we're missing the boat in talking about those people who are financially strained and suffering materially and a great deal of financial stress, who are actually middle income. And if we solve the middle income problems, we'll be solving problems beyond that. Connor, you look like you wanted to say something.
Oh, no. We're actually coming to a close soon.
Okay. Well, then, so what you're saying is you want me to stop saying something.
Well, if you want to interpret it that way,
No, I'm about done. Well, anyway, it's been a good show. I've enjoyed it. It's given me an opportunity to vent about something that has bothered me a lot for the last months. After I discovered it, it felt like an epiphany. Maybe it is, but I hope the American public has the same one. Connor, good to see you. Have a good weekend. Be careful with the snow.
Nah, you too, Sandy.
Yeah, see ya.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.